You're listening to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. And today we are going to take a different look at addiction. Overdose deaths reached an all-time high in the state last year, and it has experts and loved ones alike scrambling for new approaches. WBUR senior correspondent Deborah Becker joins us now to tell us about one that seems so appropriate to the season, love. Deb, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you. So this is the story of Ken Feldstein and his son, Brendan. Tell us a little more about them.
Yeah, they have a really powerful story. So when Brendan was in college, Ken found out that Brendan was using heroin when another parent of one of Brendan's friends called and told him that. And Ken said he was completely surprised. So he confronted Brendan. Brendan admitted it. He admitted that he became addicted after he was prescribed opioids for an injury. So Ken began looking for treatment and for help and trying to figure out what to do. And this went on for 7 years, dozens of treatment programs and sober homes. And Ken said it was really tough to try to talk about this and reach out, primarily because of stigma. So he and his late wife, Barbara, went to family support groups. And he said the groups were helpful, these peer support groups. They helped find resources, learn about treatment. They found people who understood what they were going through. But he said the main advice that they got from these groups was detach. And they heard it from treatment providers as well. Detach from the loved one with addiction, because otherwise you're enabling the drug use. And the only way that people get out of addiction, really, is if they're uncomfortable and face tough consequences. And this is how Ken explains it.
You know, so it's a really heavy message of, if you're tolerating it, you're enabling it. So big gulp of that Kool-Aid. And it sounded very reasonable, because nothing we were doing was working.
So essentially, they decided not to let Brendan come back home. And they knew that he was living in his car somewhere and engaging in really risky behavior.
So tell us a little bit about what that was like for Brendan. So now he can't come home. It sounds like he was actively addicted. What does he say?
Right. So he says, you know, he was in the throes of addiction, and he would sometimes just use again when he started to think about his life to quote unquote check out. Sometimes he would go into treatment again. This is really how he described it.
And you could argue, well, it's just as risky to,
you know, did it give me a bed and food and safety and shelter, and was that helpful? In a survival sense, yes. Did the experience help me remain sober? I think I used the day I got out.
So Brendan, really struggling, and his family didn't know what to do.
It's that, I think I used the day I got out, Deb, when I heard that really struck me, and it made me understand why Ken, his dad, might decide to try something new. So he does. Tell us about that.
Right. So he sees that Brendan's not improving, right? The family's constantly anxious. And so, you know, he felt, you know, that there was a lot going on there. And, you know, he just said, well, maybe the advice is correct. And maybe, you know, he should cut him off from the family and force recovery. Here's what Ken said.
And you could argue, well, it's just as risky to enable them to use in the house. So what do, you know? So I landed on love. I landed on love, and I still feel that love wins.
So Ken was, you know, he eventually said, look, I've got to do what feels right for my family and leverage what we do best, which is take care of each other as a family and love each other as a family. And so he changed his approach and, you know, he said, I'm going to accept my son back and try to parent him through this.
Let's hear a little more from Ken that you brought us on that.
You got to be able to do the thing that you do best as a parent, and that is love your children. Now, whatever form that takes, I don't think that's enabling. I think that's doing what comes naturally to us as parents.
So, Deb, the other really big pivot, it's sort of in your reporting on this that struck me, is when Brendan then, in response to that love, starts caring back for the family.
Right, right. So Brendan said he realized that there was a real shift with his dad. And he said it was a very profound moment for him because he realized that his dad was almost accepting his situation and wanted to help him. And he had been in a treatment program for a few weeks when Ken called him to tell him that his mom was in hospice care and wasn't expected to live much longer. The rules of the treatment program where Brendan was staying said if Brendan left for any reason, he could not return. He'd give up his bed. So Ken didn't want Brendan to leave, but Brendan did go home to take care of his mom, and it was a very meaningful time for him. This is what he said.
I ended up carrying my mother in my arms like a child up the stairs to her bed. It was a sort of literal and figurative moment of strength for me where, my mother who once carried me, right? I am now carrying and caring for in these last moments, and I'm doing it sober.
So Brendan is, obviously, this is an emotional time. It's really difficult. He's only been in treatment for a few weeks. And he said he really reached a turning point and knew he reached a turning point when he opened the fridge and he saw his mom's liquid morphine. You know, just weeks earlier, the focus of his days would have been to get his hands on something like that. So he said he was alone in the kitchen. He held the morphine in his hands for a minute, but he put it back. And this is what happened.
Yeah, that was it. I decided in that moment, not again, never again, not doing it anymore. You've caused enough hurt. It's time to step up and contribute and give this family, you know, a reason to hang on.
And Tiziana, Brendan has not used drugs in the almost decade since then.
Does he credit his parents' change, his dad's change in approach, Deb, for his sobriety?
He credits a lot of things. I don't think there's one clear reason that anyone can say. That would be the million-dollar answer, right?
Yeah.
I don't think there's one thing. But he says that support was definitely instrumental, and it was support from his family. And, he went back to treatment after his mom passed, and he had a strong 12-step fellowship group. So there were many factors, but feeling loved and supported was critical.
So I'm going to bring another voice in here. When you introduced us to Deb, Alicia Ventura, Director of Special Projects and Research in the Office-Based Addiction Treatment at Boston Medical Center. Alicia, welcome to you.
Thank you. Very nice to be here.
It's great to have you. I just want to start with your reaction to Deb's reporting and the story you just heard about Ken and Brendan.
It was fabulous.
And
Brendan, Brendan and Ken, their story illustrates so nicely all of the things that we want people to know about family members and addiction. And I am in awe of both of them and their tremendous strength and love for one another. And, you know, couldn't put it better than Ken's "I Landed on Love."
And this is a model that you want to see families move toward. Am I right?
Yes, absolutely.
Wow.
So typically, as you know, Ken described, when family members find out that their loved one is struggling with substance use, there's no obvious place for them to go. They don't know what to do. It's very stressful. But what they need is accurate information and education to make the best decisions that they can in the circumstances they're in. But instead, what we often, and we, you know, the general we provide families is well-meaning, sort of like the advice Ken received from the support group, but ultimately harmful interventions or information such as, you know, that helping your loved one struggling is just going to further enable their drug use, or that the parent or family member themselves has codependency and that they need to detach with love, kick their loved one to the street, revoke all support, et cetera, et cetera. And not only does this feel unnatural and generally awful to families, it also goes against what more and more scientific evidence continues to show, which is that family members and social support play a really important role in the recovery process. And people do better when their loved ones are supporting them and involved in their care. I mean, it's not rocket science, but it's something that just hasn't been emphasized, largely due to the stigma associated with addiction, because it is something that's emphasized in the treatment of almost every other chronic medical condition.
We're speaking with Alicia Ventura of Boston Medical Center and WBUR's Deborah Becker about this trend towards this all of the love approach versus more of a tough love approach to supporting family members who have substance use disorder. Alicia, what is the research showing that having that family support does? What's the benefit?
So there's all kinds of different outcomes that family support has been shown to increase, such as rates of retention in treatment, engagement in treatment, rates of recovery, decreased rates of substance use. There's been a lot of different things looked at in many different populations. But it all comes back to this idea that the family, and you know, defining family broadly as well, you know, could be chosen family, people that support one another and love one another, that having those folks involved, that support involved, is going to promote better health outcomes. And this isn't just true of addiction. This is true of every health condition that exists, both physical and mental health.
So I'm going to come back to you, Deb Becker. You know, I worked for years in the anti-poverty field before coming to, you know, to WBUR, and there was a strong and growing body of work that social connections and social support were so important for all kinds of family problem solving. At the same time, I wonder, as you were reporting this, what kind of pushback did you hear around concern about basic enabling and the what's the word I'm looking for? The pain that families experience with the kinds of behaviors you can see a family member who's experiencing substance use disorder, you know, demonstrating, you know, to other family members. Do you understand my question, Deb?
Yeah. There are people who, you know, who said families are already shouldering a lot, right? They're already doing so much. And also having them sort of become the umbrella, really, to try to figure out and manage treatment and get someone into recovery is another responsibility to an already overwhelmed group of people, right, who are suffering as well. And they say, you know, many people also say that they would not have stopped using substances unless they faced really harsh consequences. And so without the consequences, they don't feel it gives people a reason to stop. So there were people who were really concerned about this potential shift.
Alicia, what about that consequences piece?
It's a great question. So foundationally, addiction is characterized by continued use of a substance despite negative or harmful consequences. So if that's the starting point, we know that, right? Logically, it doesn't make sense to expect that adding additional negative consequences is going to be helpful in any way, because the very definition of having a substance use disorder or addiction tells us that this is continued use despite harmful or negative consequences. So that sort of takes care of the enabling argument in many ways. You know, it's hard because families are experiencing so much. They have higher rates of mental and physical health conditions compared to families not impacted by addiction. But what we have to remember is that most families, it's not a natural or helpful feeling for them to just detach from a loved one. And the health of family members and their loved ones are interrelated. So if you can improve the health of some family members, you'll improve the health of other family members. And the main thing is that families have been taught that they have to care for themselves apart from their loved ones who are suffering with addiction, but really they can care for themselves and their loved ones with addiction. And with the right support and education, it's not overburdening.
And Alicia, just briefly to you before I go back to Deb, sort of this more tough love approach, I know I'm using a simple term for it, has been the standard for a long time. What about training people in this new approach?
Yes. Tough love is the way it's been for a long time. At Boston Medical Center, through the Gregan Center for Addiction Training and Technical Assistance Program, we are certainly working on training addiction professionals on, I don't even want to call it a new paradigm, because many folks have felt this way or adopted this perspective for many years. But, you know, we're trying to train folks to approach the family as a positive resource and not to place blame on them, but rather to view them as the potential resource and catalyst that they are.
And Deb Becker, back to you. How are Ken and Brendan today?
I think they're doing very well. I mean, Brendan lives out of state at the moment, but I think you could hear in their voices that they're very close to each other, and I think that they've really done a lot of work to restore their family.
And as a reporter, I mean, this is a subject matter you've tracked for a long time, Deb. What are you going to watch next?
I think watch how this plays out. Watch to see if there's more research on this and other approaches, and how treatment continues to evolve amid that skyrocketing overdose death rate.
All right, WBUR senior correspondent Deborah Becker, the reporter on this story, and Alicia Ventura from Boston Medical Center. I really want to thank you both for being with us on this today.
You're welcome.
So much.